Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinth in the News for Monday, January 25th, 2010. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve. That's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon, as I will be doing every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. My lead-in music is the first cut off of Susan Alexander's CD, Sequentia, called Icos, which is short for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry. Sequentia is music using tones recorded from DNA vibrations. Susan recorded these tones in 1988 with the help of Dr. David Diemer, at that time a cell biologist at the Davis campus of the University of California. If any of you would like to chat while we are on the air, please go to Christiana-Anea at blogtalkradio.com. Well, my guest today is supposed to be Eve Hogan. She was a workshop presenter at the 2009 Labyrinth Society gathering here in the Portland area, but she is not online right now, and so hopefully she will come online shortly. She is a author and inspirational speaker, as well as a labyrinth consultant, and she's doing a lot of interesting things in Hawaii, where she lives. She lives on the island of Maui, lucky dog. But unfortunately, she's been held up, it looks like, and she's not online right now. So I'm hoping in a short period of time that I will get her online here. Well, I can tell you that we have a great lineup. Shortly, we're coming. I have a bunch of different people coming on in the next month or two, and I'm looking for new guests. So any of you out there who are labyrinth aficionados, or even if you have walked labyrinths and you have some tales to tell or some information or a favorite story that you have of your labyrinth experiences, you can certainly email me and give me some information, or you can, I'd rather you email me. That's christianatb@gmail.com. And let me know what you'd like to talk about, and maybe I can get you on the air and have you as one of my guests. I'm still waiting to hear from Eve. I don't really know what the problem is. I'm hoping that she's there, but she's very busy, and I knew she was out today at another function, so she's probably gotten hung up someplace. But let me tell you what we're doing. Let me see. My list of labyrinth luminaries, which is what I call them, and what what's coming up in the next couple of weeks. I have Nancy Kloss, who makes labyrinth needlepoint samplers, next week, and she has a wonderful story to tell of her first experience as a student in France at Chartres Cathedral in Chartres, France. Standing there on the labyrinth as a student, and so she's eager to tell her story, and I think it will probably speak to so many first-time labyrinth walkers and to people who just sort of stumbled on the labyrinth out of the blue, they think. Those of us who are not labyrinth neophytes know full well that the labyrinth you don't stumble upon, that it's just right at the right time and right when you need it, really. Then we have Adrienne Fermoyle, who is, I'm sure that's not the way I pronounce her last name. I apologize, Adrienne. She is the author of a workbook called Transcending Grief, A Healing Journey into the Labyrinth of Loss. And this is just so appropriate for right now with what is the devastation in Haiti and the Haitian tragedy and what we're all feeling and the loss we're feeling. We've had lots and lots of labyrinth walks and services in the Portland area for the people of Haiti to raise money. And I'm sure that this will be a wonderful episode to talk to Adrienne and a great tool for people to dealing, for those who actually have people that they've lost, but also family, friends, the Haitian community, encourage them to get to the services where there are labyrinth walks, labyrinths to be walked, or just get out and find a labyrinth through the Worldwide Labyrinth Locator on the Labyrinth Society website or Veritas website, and avail yourselves of this tool that is so helpful and calming and brings a sense of peace and order to a very, very upsetting and chaotic situation. My heart goes out to everyone in Haiti and all of the Haitians in this country. We are with you, and we are so sad about the situation, and we are doing everything we can. I know many of my friends who are nurses who are there now, one in particular at one of the big hospitals on the border between the Dominican Republic and Haiti. Let me just check back and see if she's on now. Here she is. Okay, let's get her on. Hi, Eve.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry. I was talking, waiting, hoping, I figured you had gotten held up someplace.
Well, you know what? I dialed in and the phone I was dialing from, I was using a landline, and for some reason it doesn't dial out, and it kept saying me it was the wrong number, so I was scrambling to see what I was doing wrong, but it was just the wrong phone.
Well, mahalo.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm so glad to hear your voice, and it's great. And it's so far away, and you sound like you're right in the next room. So let's get right to talking with you today. And I have lots and lots of questions after having met you at the gathering, and your lovely person. Eve also did the closing ceremony, which was great fun at the gathering for all of you people out there listening in. So you've been a life coach and speaker for almost 20 years about. My biggest question is speaking, and very often probably on similar topics, and being with your clients, and how do you keep yourself fresh and engaged with your material and with your clients? What are some of the things that you do?
Well, you know, what I find is it's a new experience every time I do everything, because of the people are different, and every person experiencing, whether it's the labyrinth or private coaching, they have a different view of it that keeps it really fun and inspiring to be a part of. You know, even if I did the exact same exercise, and I mean, I do try and mix things up and share different information, but there's certain activities and certain tools that I just know I'm going to share with people because they're so valuable. But even when I'm sharing the exact same tool or the exact same information, the comments from the people I'm working with, or their perspective on it, or the problems or the situations or their concerns or their ideas that they bring to the table, just constantly keeping it, mix it up. Keep it mixing up, and so it's always a fresh experience and a new application.
Well, in one of the topics that you speak about, and it's a topic of expertise for you, is something you call tools for self-mastery. What does this encompass?
Well, boy, this is a long conversation if I got into all of them with you, but really what my passion is helping people recognize that they have within them at their fingertips, right there. They don't have to look outward or go anywhere else to get to this, is a source of strength and compassion and knowing and intuition and wisdom and in resilience. I really like to help people tap into their resilience, because I think we've forgotten that we are resilient beings on the planet. And so when I talk about tools for self-mastery, I really talk about helping people to create healthier relationships, to create a higher level of self-esteem, to access a higher level of their own wisdom and strength. And I do it in a whole lot of different ways. I mean, I use the labyrinth for sure as a means to help people access and kind of go within and find what's there and really get in, kind of an introduction to themselves, if you will. It's such a powerful place to get self-reflection and self-discovery. I use that. And I also teach a whole myriad of skills that I kind of position them as relationship skills. But it doesn't have to be necessarily a romantic relationship. The relationship can be with yourself in the form of self-esteem, or with your family members, your children, your spouse, your sweetheart, or with your relationship with spirit and your relationship with your life and your relationship with your, you know, your own presence here. And so I teach a myriad of different skills that apply
and
to that.
Is this depending on what the client themselves want, or after a while have the direction use, or it's a combination of a bunch of different?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I have my personal arsenal of tools. That's kind of a bad word, huh? I have my tool belt of material that I like to share with people, because I know the application for so many different things is really appropriate. But what I've found is that, yes, it has to do with the person, because if they come to me and, you know, if I have an agenda, and then I'm not going to be listening very carefully when they share what their issue is. And if I have an agenda for anger and they're not dealing with anger, then that tool is not really what they need right in that moment. And so I will listen first and hear what it is they need and listen to what the situation is and then help paint a new perspective for them. One of the things I use a lot is what I call 5 essential life skills. And these are a process of first remembering who you really are. That's the first skill. And remembering that we are powerful beings. We are resilient beings. We are intuitive beings. We are creative beings. And really helping people to recognize that if they don't know it already, or remember it if they may have forgotten. And then the second life skill is to be self-observant. And I love the labyrinth for teaching these. But I can go into that in a moment with you if you want. But I teach people to be self-observant, because what I found is that if we don't know what it is that we're doing, we operate from a place of automatic pilot, and we are just kind of unconscious about what we're doing and the effect we have in the world. And so when we really practice being self-observant in every given moment and in any given moment, what happens is we become self-aware. And when we become self-aware, we have the ability to choose. Is this serving me? Is this not serving me? Is this working? What are the results? How's it showing up? How does it feel? When we become self-aware, we have the opportunity to make choices. And when we make choices, we become powerful instead of operating on automatic pilot. So it's a very important, like I often tell people, if you get nothing else but learn to become self-observant, you automatically experience transformation once you start to see what you're doing. The changes almost automatically start happening when you're aware. The third essential life skill is to let go of what's not serving you. The fourth essential life skill is to realign with who you really are and being grounded in the present moment in your authentic being. And the fifth essential life skill is to choose actions in alignment with who you are and what you're trying to create. And I use the labyrinth to teach this because the center of the labyrinth is such a perfect reminder of who we really are. It's there in the center, it's unwavering, and it's surrounded with all this chaos and all these twists and turns, which I liken to our personality and our personal dramas, our health dramas, our love dramas, our money dramas, all those different dramas. But the center is unchanged. It doesn't ever change, and it's constant, and it's something you can rely on and something you can access. And so if you look at that, it's just a symbolic metaphor for who we are, that we all have all that chaos going on, but we all also have a sacred center that's not caught up in the chaos. It's a really powerful reminder. And then as we walk into the labyrinth, we can practice self-observation. What am I doing right now? Am I walking it impatiently? Well, then look at that. Is it serving you to be impatient? If it is, go continue, be impatient. But if it's not serving you to be impatient, it's a great opportunity to then let that go and in that very moment make a new choice to continue walking from in alignment with what you are there to do and what does serve you, and see if you can do that. So it's very powerful to use these five essential life skills on the labyrinth as a practice ground and then take them off the labyrinth and apply them in your life in every given moment.
When did you start incorporating labyrinths into your life and work?
I started using the labyrinth about 15 years ago. I actually got Lauren Arches' book, Walking the Sacred Path.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I loved the title. I just really thought the title was magnificent. And before I picked up the book to see what was in it, I just sort of sat with the book on my table with that great title looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, and then when I picked it up, I just immediately knew. I've been doing relationship work with people and personal growth work with people for quite a while prior to that, but I immediately recognized the labyrinth as a wonderful experiential tool where I can teach the concept of self-observation. I can tell you about the five essential life skills, but when you have an opportunity to right then walk into the labyrinth, remember who you really are, or invite that aspect to reveal itself to you, to be self-observant as you journey through the labyrinth, to immediately let go of choices that are not serving you. Like if you're judging people on the labyrinth or if you're having self-doubt on the labyrinth, notice that you're doing that. If it's not serving you, you can immediately let those behaviors go and try something else. You can experiment with it. And it's not too threatening because it's just this 36 or 42-foot circle or whatever it is. It's only 15 minutes, right? It's like not too threatening to experiment with doing things a different way in that kind of laboratory, if you will. So I just really realized immediately that it was a great place to actually put people through the paces, you know, where they could actually take what I was telling them on an intellectual level and actually put it into practice on an experiential level and be able to walk away transformed rather than just informed.
And do you do this in a way such that, you know, when you first have a client who is just meeting you, you don't plop them right in the labyrinth. You first do the intellectual, and then the labyrinth comes after.
Yeah.
So they get all the intellectual stuff. They get experientially right there, as an immediate experience, physical, metaphor, everything right there.
Yeah. My experience is that when people walk the labyrinth without having any intellectual understanding of why they're doing it, or without understanding the process of metaphor, I think that's one of the most important things for them to understand, that what you experience on the labyrinth is what the labyrinth is teaching you. You know, we often walk it thinking we're learning about the labyrinth, and we walk out going, well, that was interesting. I may not need to do that ever again. But it was interesting because we thought we were learning about the labyrinth. But when you really stop and become self-observant and learn about yourself, that's when you actually discover all kinds of information about yourself, and you know, it becomes very powerful. And so I usually try to give them some information before the experience so that they have a structure to hang their experience on, because otherwise what I've seen happen is they walk out and they go, you know, I just was really confused and wasn't sure if I was going the right way or what was going on, and that is what the labyrinth was showing them, their tendency to have self-doubt or their confusion. And if they don't know that, they walk away going, well, the labyrinth was confusing, and their conclusion is that that was about the labyrinth rather than about themselves. When they have that tidbit of understanding, oh, that was metaphor, how was I supposed to look at that in my life, then it gets really juicy because people discover so much about themselves. I like if I have an ideal opportunity to give people about half an hour of information minimal before I put them on the labyrinth, depending on what we're focusing on or what the exercise is. But you can do it in 5 minutes to give them enough to really learn something about themselves, as long as you include, at least in my experience, as long as that concept of metaphor is included.
Mm.
That's just the way I like to use it. I mean, some people use it simply as a path of prayer. And if you tell people this is a path of prayer and they walk into it praying, they'll have a powerful experience also.
Yeah.
You know, I don't
mean to
say that you can't just from that little tidbit, but I like to use it as a self-reflective and transformational tool for the individual or for couples.
Well, it's a wonderful, helpful tool for your practice. I mean, that's what you're
mm-hmm.
doing. You're trying to, part of the whole idea of what you're doing in the practice itself. You're a proprietor of a sacred garden of Maliko.
Maliko.
Where is this, and does it contain a labyrinth?
It contains two labyrinths. The sacred garden is on Maui in a town called Makalau, and it's a beautiful, beautiful spot. Maliko is actually a gulch, we call it, but I guess maybe, I don't know what else you'd call it. It's a gulch. It's got very steep walls on both sides and a stream bed at the bottom, and the sacred garden sits beside the stream bed. And it's a 10,000 square foot greenhouse and additional orchards and koi ponds and meditation gardens and a shrine room. And we have two labyrinths, both the 11th Circuit or Chartres Cathedral style, although it's not an exact replica. And we have a 7th Circuit labyrinth on the property as well. And people come every day to walk the labyrinth. I'm so encouraged to watch, because 15 years ago when I started doing labyrinth walks, I've been doing full moon labyrinth walks on Maui for 15 years, or 14 years now, I think. And as I started doing them, it took so much education to get people to come and to understand what it was. And, you know, they come to be educated, but you had to educate them first to get them to come. And so there was a lot of work in just trying to let people know what the labyrinth is and get them to come to these events. And now, you know, 14 years later, all I have is a little sign on the side of the road or a brochure in the racks, and people come every single day, and many of them have researched ahead of time where the labyrinths are on Maui so that they can walk them while they're here. And so it's really, really fun to see the increase of understanding and the use of the labyrinth in the current times.
Is this a property that you own, or is it a...
Yeah, it's actually my backyard. My husband and I bought it about 4.5 years ago, and at the time it had this huge greenhouse that was full of dead plants and really dead energy, as the people prior had got smuggling heroin in the bottom of the orchids. And that they all got put in jail, but that energy got kind of trapped in the greenhouse. Like, I could not walk in there without getting the heebie-jeebies, and I'd like ask my husband to come with me if I had to go in there for some reason. And it was just really an unpleasant environment. It was very dark. It had a lot of shade cloth keeping the light out, and the plants were all dead. And just kind of slowly over time, in getting some of the shade cloth out, bringing in more light, bringing in live plants, bringing in, putting in, you know, little gardens of meditation gardens. We've got a huge Buddha that's like 6 feet tall. Well, he's probably 5 feet tall and 600 pounds. He's a huge Buddha, and he's one of the most sweetest, beautiful Buddhas I've ever seen. And so we've got a Buddha garden there, and we've got, you know, different representations from different religions around the world, so that, you know, we want it to be all inclusive and let everybody know that I personally only believe in one God with many names, and want to honor all the different names and faces that God has revealed him or herself to be
That combined with all the labyrinths has completely changed the energy of the place.
That's right. And now it's like people walk in and they clasp their heart. They might get teary. They go, oh my God, it's so beautiful here and so peaceful. And it's just really fun to watch them simply have an experience of peace. You know, I think it sounds so funny because on Maui, everybody thinks, oh, well, Maui's such a beautiful place already, you know? Like, you wouldn't have to go to a beautiful place on Maui to experience beauty and peace, right? But, you know, so much of it is about tourism, and, you know, it is a beautiful place. But there's for women especially, I think there's very few places in the world, Maui included, where you can go alone into nature and feel safe and not have to look over your shoulder. You know, like, who's coming? Even if you go down to the beach, like, oh, some guy going to come up and talk to me, or, you know, there's not very many places where we can let down our guard and just be in nature, either with a girlfriend or alone, and or even with a man friend, you know, where you're not concerned about your safety. And this is one of those places, and it's really sweet to watch people just kind of come and just be. And they come here to grieve, and they come here to celebrate, and they come here to prepare for birth, and they come here to draw and journal. They come here to contemplate life changes. They come here, you know, for a myriad reasons, and it's really, you know, and just to simply pray and meditate, and it's very sweet. It's a very sweet spot.
So it's open to the public all the time? Any time they want
to come? It's open to the public daily, 10 to 5, uh-huh. every day. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's wonderful. So tell me a little bit. I mean, you've officiated at so many Labyrinth events. Do you have a few choice stories to tell, or one or two little examples of you know, special event or special thing that happened?
There's so many that come to mind. I'm just trying to think. There's a couple of them that are really fun. I actually wrote this one in my book, Way of the Winding Path, because it was just such a cute story. I was doing a labyrinth walk for a group of teenagers out in Lahaina, and it was a church group. And while I was setting up, it was like all the neighborhood kids came to see what we were doing. We were putting this big canvas labyrinth out on the church. And so there were all these kids, and a lot of them were like, I think the Tongan church community was meeting in the church at the time, and the parents were inside the church, so a lot of the kids were out playing in the yard. And so a whole bunch of Tongan kids and Hawaiian kids and different cultures were there, and the little kids were all like wanting to play on the labyrinth, so we were letting them play on it while we were setting up and getting it ready. And then when we pulled the teens aside and we did the talk with the teens, we kind of ushered the little ones off and told them that this was time for the teens, and we did a labyrinth walk with the teens, and it was so fascinating to watch the difference, because the little kids were running and playing on it, you know, and just exploring it on a fun level, and the teens took it very seriously and were really having a very peaceful, quiet, slow, meditative walk. And when they were done, the little ones came back up to me and said, "Can we do it again?" And we said, "Sure, you know, one more time before we pull it down." And it was really interesting to watch how different the kids used it after they'd seen the older children use it in a more peaceful way. And so I said, I thought I would walk the labyrinth too. And so I went in to walk the labyrinth, and this little girl came up and said, "Can I walk right by, you know, can I follow you into the lab?" That's what she said, into the lab. And I, knowing that everything is metaphor, I thought, oh, now this is going to be interesting. I wonder what will be revealed for me about having this little girl right behind me. So I said, sure, she could follow me. And about two more steps in, she goes, "Do you know your way into the lab?" And it just struck me metaphorically as how funny is that? How, you know, this little girl's voice asking me if I really knew what I was doing, which, to be quite honest, is not uncommon in my inner self-talk, you know, do you really know what you're doing, Eve? You know, I have that little voice of self-doubt that plays every now and then. And so I assured her I knew what I was doing, and I took two more steps, and she goes, "Are you sure you know your way?" And it was just adorable to watch her kind of question me as we go. And then when we got to the center, I told the kids, I said, "Be quiet and listen for the voice of God and see what you hear." And she turned to me and she goes, "I saw Jesus, and he told me he was always with me." And it was just so beautiful to see these children in their pure delight. One time I was doing a walk with the teenagers up at a prep high school. It's a very high-end prep high school on Maui. And this young man was walking out of the labyrinth, and he looked like he was practically jumping out of his skin. He was so excited. And when he got out, the teacher and I asked him what he had experienced, and he said, "I discovered that I have a happy soul." And we love that. I love that. And he went on to explain that underneath all the drama and underneath all of the difficulties he experienced in life, underneath all of that, he knew that he had a happy soul. And to me, that's kind of what the center of the labyrinth is a reminder of, is it's that happy soul space. It's unwavering, and it's unaffected by the dramas that we have on a personality level. I mean, there's so many stories.
That's
I could
lovely.
Sit here
wow.
Story after story.
Well, I bet that's lovely. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Were you born and raised in Hawaii? Are you native? Yeah. I mean,
I was born and raised in Southern California, actually, and came over here on vacation 18 and a half years ago. Met a man while I was on vacation. Fell madly in love with him. And spent the next 5 months on the telephone. This was before the internet was big and before phone rates were low. And we spent 5 months on the phone coining the term intellectual foreplay, which is a provocative title for Think First. It's one of the titles in one of my books. And we actually kind of interviewed each other for 5 months on the phone. really clarifying what our values were, what our interests were, what our passions were, what our dreams were, you know, and basic things like, you know, lifestyle choices. So that when we finally got together, we had a really solid foundation, and we've been together for ever since, 18 and a half years now. And it's just been an amazing journey. Mm. I moved to Maui 5 months later, and here we are.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, you certainly look like someone who is a Southern California Maui kind of person. You're the golden hair and
the beach boys say, the bushy blonde hairdo, right?
Well, have you ever had a chance to work with Native Hawaiian shamans in labyrinth and ceremony?
Since you've been living there. There's one Native shaman. I think she's part. I know she's Hawaiian. I'm not exactly sure what she is. She is a Hawaiian kahuna, and I believe she also may have either part Native American mix, or she has studied Native American tradition. And she has come and used the labyrinth for her own ceremonies. I didn't actually work with her on it, but she's come and utilized the labyrinth. And that was really fun to see. She came in her full regalia and brought a class with her and did an initiation in the labyrinth, and it was really neat to watch. But I haven't actually worked so much with Native Hawaiians in the labyrinth yet. But it is something I'd like to do. I'm excited about that.
Well, it says on your website, and that's www.heartpath.com, that you're now offering staff organization retreats on the mm-hmm. Labyrinth in the Sacred Garden on Maui. Is that at your place, and what is that about?
It is. What I've found that's so interesting, I don't know if you've ever heard this story, but it's something I really love. It's kind of unique. You know Frank Lloyd Wright, who is the architect, an amazing architect?
Yeah.
It's said that when he built a building complex, he would build all the buildings and not put in the pathways, and then inhabit them with people and watch where the pathways were worn in the ground and then put the pathways in where the people actually walked. Rather than superimposing pathways on the people, he watched where they walked and then put the natural pathways in, which I just love that concept. And so for the last 3 years, I've been doing the Sacred Garden and kind of just creating space and watching how it's used, watching, if you will, make the leap with me, watching where the people walk to see what's actually needed. And what I've seen is that there's a need here on Maui for sacred, beautiful meeting space, because so many people, from the school teachers to office workers to child protective services, when they have a staff meeting or any kind of renewal or any kind of meeting at all, it's always in these very unpleasant, very old buildings, very sterile environment that's not nurturing to their spirits or their souls at all. And so what I've seen here is places from rehabilitation, people in rehabilitation communities where they're going through a program of detox and learning new skills, where their counselors have come to use the garden and have meetings there. I've watched people from the Department of Education come to have staff meetings here. I've watched Senior Citizen Center come. I've seen pregnancy classes come. Teachers who work with kids with special needs have brought their kids here, as well as come after work to kind of take a deep breath and release the stress of the day. And so what I'm in the process of right now is both offering the Sacred Garden as a place of retreat and staff renewal, where I do workshops and provide space for them to kind of connect on a deeper level than what they could possibly connect at work, and really focus on rejuvenation and renewal and strengthening, so that they can go back and do the very important work of community service or whatever it is that they're doing from a place of strength and resilience and wisdom and creativity and connection with each other and with spirit. So I've been doing that kind of thing, and I've just started a nonprofit called Divine Nature Alliance, which is really looking at nature as a gateway to our own divine nature. Because what I find is that just from watching the way people use the garden, just being in such a beautiful, peaceful place helps them, kind of facilitates their experience of their own sacred space, their inner sacred space. It's interesting, the Hawaiians used to have a tradition of creating places called Pu'u Honua, which was a place of refuge. And it was actually designed so that if you did something wrong, which was very easy in the old Hawaiian days, like if you just looked at the chief, you'd broken the law and you could be put to death. I mean, there were very strict rules about what you could and couldn't do. And so they created these places of refuge that are a little bit akin to our childhood Ali Ali Oxenfree, where if you broke the rule, you could get to this place of refuge, and if you got there, then you got to start again. And you weren't in trouble anymore. And I look at the Sacred Garden in some ways as a modern-day place of refuge, but I also look at it as a place where people can find their own inner place of refuge, where they can kind of go back and reset their zeros and regroup and rejuvenate so that they can go back out into the world with a fresher, cleaner, healthier perspective than that which they came with.
No, I'm sure in that kind of environment, especially with organizations that are the bureaucratic, with hospitals and schools and things, where you have such a mindset that's, in a square box, when you take them out of that mindset, they come up with fresh creative ideas because they're
Exactly. Yeah. And when you have a meeting in an environment that's not nurturing to the soul, you walk in with one energy and you walk out with pretty much the same energy because you've been in that same space. It's just like being at work. But when you come into a totally different environment that's totally nurturing to the soul, even if you don't talk about spirit or you don't talk about religion or you don't do anything but just be in the presence of the plants and the peace and beauty there, you don't walk out the same as you walk in. That's one of the reasons I really like doing coaching clients there, too, because I feel like the garden itself does half the work. Like, when I'm in a meeting with somebody doing coaching and I'm in a little sterile office, it's all about the conversation. Everything that's said is what helps the person or doesn't help the person, right? But when they're in the garden, even if I'm silent, they walk out transformed. They walk out different. They do their own work, which is so important to me. I don't want anybody dependent on me or anything outside of them, the labyrinth included, for the ability to do the work. And just being in a space where they have the freedom to do that is such a valuable thing. It's been really unique. It's been a great lesson for me because I never, until this garden kind of happened to me, I really didn't have a deep understanding of that. And it's been a great lesson.
Is this something that you and your husband work on and contribute to? I mean, is he interested in that as well?
He's not so much like he's not a labyrinth walker. He has walked it and he understands the value of it. And this isn't really his cup of tea. However, he totally respects it and respects that it's my cup of tea, and he contributes to the space when something needs fixing or I need help with something, he's right there helping me create it. He helped me build the labyrinth. He helped me put, when I bought this Buddha, hi, honey, I bought a 600-pound Buddha, and now we have to figure out where to put it, and he built the altar for it. So he's very much a contributor, but not an active participant. I mean, he just gets it through osmosis and understands the beauty and the value and supports it.
Your labyrinths there, what are they made of? What are the paths made out of? Are they two separate, different, very different, or are they both similar in the paths?
They are pretty different. There's one outside inside of a certain sort of nestled in a circle of trees that people think I've planted the trees like that somehow, and they're ancient, huge trees, but they're in a perfect circle. So it's kind of amazing. The labyrinth is sort of nestled right in there. And it's got rocks around the outside edge, and then it's full of gravel, and then I buried the bricks to make the pathway, and not the actual pathway, the lines between the pathways. So the path is gravel, and the lines between the gravel are bricks on side, so that it's the short side of the brick, not the long side of the brick.
Right, the narrow,
So it's a narrow line instead of a wide line, I guess is how I would say it. So it's brick and gravel, and you can look at it on my website, Maui, sacredgardenmaui.com has beautiful pictures of the garden and the website, so that's sacredgardenmaui.com. Okay. The indoor labyrinth inside the greenhouse is a seven-circuit labyrinth, and that one is also on gravel, but it's just placed with white coral, and I went down to the beach and collected coral. It looks like white rocks, but it's white coral, and built the lines between the paths with the white coral. And then I found a coral that spelled out love. I found I found four pieces of coral that looked like an L-O-V-E and put them in the center of the labyrinth. It's part of the path. So unless you're really looking, you don't even see it, but it's a really neat thing. So when you reach the center, you see the word love at your feet.
And is the center in the is this a circle or an oval, or what shape is the center? Because you can do the centers of classical all different
shapes.
In the 11th circuit
labyrinth, it's the difference between mine and the Chartres Cathedral labyrinth is that mine, you walk into an open heart. So it's a circle with an open heart design inside. On the 7th circuit labyrinth, it's just a small sort of oval space. It's the center.
Okay, we only have about 5 minutes, so I've got to get to this. You are you're going to be back here in the States in April. You've got a women's retreat and labyrinth workshop, which the labyrinth workshop, is open to men and women. And
right.
That's on Friday the 23rd. At the Columbia River Gorge at the Minucha Retreat Center.
Yeah.
And then on the 24th and 25th, it's the women's retreat, and that's entitled Discover Your Heart Path. Tell us a bit about it.
So I'm really excited about this. I was there for the Labyrinth Conference back in October, and I spoke at a church called Celebration Church just outside of Portland, and they asked me to come back and do women's retreat in April. And so it's their women's retreat, but it is open to any women who want to come. And they wanted to make a day available to men and women, educating them about the labyrinth. So they asked if we could do Friday for men and women and then do the weekend for women only. And it's going to be really a really wonderful process of making peace with your past and setting your intentions for the future and utilizing the labyrinth and other tools and skills for self-mastery to really discover and set and firmly set yourself on your own personal heart path and grounding in your journey. So, equipped with the tools and skills to assist you.
And do they
really
have their own labyrinth?
They do have a labyrinth at Manuka. I don't know if you went on the Columbia River Gorge tour at the last day, but they actually stopped there at the last spot at the Manuka Retreat Center, and they do have a labyrinth there. I think Lisa Moriarty built it, I believe. I'm not sure about that, but I believe that to be the case. And it's a really beautiful labyrinth, and it's right on the Columbia River, and it's in the gorge. It's a really, really sweet location.
Well, I didn't go on that tour, and I'd like to see it, to visit that. I'll have to take myself up there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's exciting. And do you know, is there a limit in the number of people? How many people do you?
I don't know the limit, and I don't even know. I'm not the one you sign up with. It'll be through Celebration Church. So if you give me a couple days, and then go back to my website, because I don't have it up currently. I haven't updated my website for a little while. I need to get on that. But if you go to sacredgardenmaui.com or heartpath.com. And click on events. Within the next few days, I'll be getting it up there on the website. Or you can look up Celebration Church. It's just below Portland. And they will have the information available, and you can sign up through them. I think it's pretty reasonably priced, and it's going to be just a really wonderful event.
I know one thing I wanted to ask you. Do you use music when you're doing these labyrinth events? And do you routinely drum or when you do your full moon ceremonies?
You know, I used to do the full moon ceremony with live music, like a mandolin and guitar player. And then when they stopped coming, I moved to the labyrinth that I'm currently at the Sacred Garden. I really just leave it to the nature sounds, because there's all these birds singing, and there's wind chimes nearby, and the wind in the trees, and the nature sounds there are absolutely a song. And so currently I'm using nature's music. But I'm not at all opposed to using music, and when musicians come forth who want to be a part of it, I'm more than happy to have them. I've had didgeridoo players, and we had one guy come who, it's not a sitar, but it's like a sitar, who came and sat in the center and played that. And so, you know, I have sort of wandering minstrels who show up in my labyrinth from time to time, and they're always welcome to come and play.
Well, we're out of time, Eve. You know, thank you so much. I had another question. I wanted to know about your spiral labyrinth calendar, but we'll have to do that another time, I think. So
yes, on my website.
Okay.
Thank
you
so much
for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. Aloha.
Aloha. It's my intention to enlighten Labyrinth neophytes and support Labyrinth veterans with guests like Eve, who provide a depth of information not available through other sources. Many blessings on her path, Eve. You've been listening to Labyrinth in the News, in the live category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Please join me next week when my guest will be Nancy Kloss, artist and designer of Labyrinth Needlepoint Kits, who has a wonderful story about Chartres Cathedral to tell all of us. And as I said, we've got lots of new people coming up in the next month, over the next quarter, and we're going to be doing a one about a labyrinth using it as a path for loss, which is especially germane right now given the Haitian tragedy and the earthquake there. So please have a blessed week and stay tuned in Lachish.